Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is the pre-Thanksgiving show, as you well know. Quite a change from that to Earth Angel, but Earth Angel is a favorite song of mine. So let's listen for about 5 seconds, and I'll tell you why. There is no reason. It's just a period of my life, that's all. Now, I want to open with a very tragic story about California injustice. I want to show you how crazy the state is that I live in. Listen to the headline now from the San Francisco newspaper. Mom who fell asleep on baby, killing her, not charged. Mom, I love, everything's a mom. My dog is a better mother than this one. Mom who fell asleep on baby, killing her, not charged. A Mendocino County woman will not face criminal charges for allegedly falling asleep while under the influence of drugs and smothering her infant daughter at a San Rafael homeless shelter, a so-called prosecutor said today. Melissa Lambert, 23, of Fort Bragg, California, had been booked November 9th at Marin County Jail on suspicion of involuntary manslaughter and willful cruelty to a child causing injury or death. But listen to this. But prosecutors decided not to file charges, said Chief Deputy DA Barry Borden. Listen to the case. The case stemmed from the death of Lambert's 9-week-old daughter, Leilani Adams. Police said Lambert was at the homeless shelter when she fell asleep while breastfeeding Leilani, rolled onto her and smothered her. Here's the punchline paragraph. During an interview with investigators earlier this month, Lambert admitted that she had injected heroin less than 24 hours before Leilani's death, police said. Previously, an autopsy had determined that the baby had methamphetamine in her system at the time of her death. Now, I have a number of questions. I don't need to ask them. You're asking them yourself. Here's a lovely mother breastfeeding while doing meth and heroin, rolls over on a baby and kills it, and the so-called prosecutor will not pursue a case against her. But if you look at an illegal immigrant the wrong way in California, you get charged with a hate crime, don't you? Now I'll ask you another question. Why did they not prosecute her? Well, because she was at a homeless shelter. Now I'll ask you another question. Should she be given Norplant until she kicks drugs? Because I call for it in trickle-up poverty. You heard me. I do not believe that just because you're a human being, you have the right to have children. I believe that having a child should be a privilege, not a right. And I also believe that if you're a filthy drug addict who killed your child by rolling over on your child while you're on heroin, the state has an obligation to put you on Norplant until you clean up your act. I call for it in trickle-up poverty. Now, who's meaner? Michael Savage, who wants mothers like this put on Norplant, or the mother who rolled over on a baby and killed her? Now, the way you answer that question will determine who you are, whether you're mentally disabled and a liberal, or whether you're sane and you're a conservative. You know, there used to be a division in this country between the have and the have-nots. That's the way it was divided, haves and have-nots. Well, today a poll came out, and 69% of Republicans said that the Bush-era tax cut should be extended. Amongst the Democrats, 68% of Democrats said that unemployment benefits should be extended. And you know what that means? It means that people who are conservatives generally are the workers, and people who are the Democrats are the leeches. So I would say it's a division between the workers and the leeches rather than the haves and the have-nots. Now that I've told you the horrible story about this degenerate drug-addicted mother who rolled over on a baby and will not be prosecuted by the weak prosecutors in the Bay Area who will only prosecute white males for crimes that they don't commit, I want to go on to a dog story. I'm on vacation in a way, not really. I'm never on vacation. My mind, what do you turn your mind off? I'm down in L.A. visiting relatives. So most of the family, my immediate family is here. It's a wonderful time. And so I flew down the, Saturday with my dog, okay? Now Mrs. S. flies in Saturday night from another city with a new dog for someone else. Teddy's a 10-pound, 11-pound gray poodle, 10-pound. It's a beautiful... I'll tell you, let me back up. I'm going to tell you a dog story, a family dog story that's true. And depending upon whether you like the story or you don't like it, will determine whether you're a liberal or a conservative. So I'll start from the top. I have a 10-pound poodle. He's my best friend. I travel with him everywhere. Okay? I've had him for 5 years. He's my buddy. Teddy's my buddy. So one of my family members has a cockapoo. That's a mixture between a cocker spaniel and a poodle. That's how I found the poodle breed and came to love the poodle breed. So I have a pure poodle, right? So it's an all-white cockapoo that this family member has. And you can't find an all-white cockapoo. So Mrs. S. locates an all-white cockapoo in Miami. She buys the all-white cockapoo, and she flies the all-white cockapoo, which is like all of a few weeks old, I don't know how old, down to L.A., and she arrives Saturday night with the little dog, which I don't know. The women are telling me how old she is. She's a couple of weeks old. A little white cockapoodle. So now there's a house with three dogs in it. It's already like a family, a beautiful. So you got Teddy, the 5-pound poodle. He's got his cousin dog, who's like much bigger than him, a cockapoo. And they're growling and snapping and barking, but I know how to calm them down. I bribe both of them with pieces of cheese, and they look at me like little hobos. And then they stop. Now enter the picture, the little poodle, the little cockapoo, a white one. Now the dog after a day, the young one, the baby dog, a little girl, who we got for the relative, is so incredibly intelligent, it's hard to believe. She picks up Teddy's leash, and she bites into it and pulls him around like she wants to take him for a walk. She pushes the two bigger dogs around. They're afraid of her already. And she can read virtually everything you say to her before you say it. So she's a super smart, wonderful little dog. And strangely enough, although she's a puppy only a few weeks old, when she grabs poor Teddy's chain and pulls on it, he has trouble pulling away from her. What can I tell you? Teddy has big plans for Thanksgiving, and one of them consists of not being around the turkey when the little poodle is here. Now that I've told you a pretty dog story, I want you to decide whether you liked it or you hated it. If you hated it, you're a liberal. If you liked it, you're a God-loving American. And now let's go to a song called Come Softly to Me by the Fleetwoods, right here on the Savage Nation. A little Come Softly to Me. All right, click on it. It is the Savage Nation. Nice song. The Fleetwoods. Let's go to the callers. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. I'll take calls on any subject except the TSA. I refuse to talk about being touched by degenerates at the airport. Tucson, Brent, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Savage. I enjoyed your story very much about Teddy.
That means you're a sane conservative. Good for you.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I always enjoy your stories about your dogs. I know you have a deep love for animals and all the things
I do. I do. I love animals.
Yes. Yes. I was wondering for Thanksgiving, what were Teddy's plans other than staying away from getting put in the oven as a turkey? What are his plans
for Thanksgiving? No, it's funny. Teddy's so little, sometimes I lie in bed watching TV and I run my hand down his real leg, and his real leg is no bigger than a chicken's foot. I realize underneath all that fur, there's just a little skinny dog who's got so much courage, you know? He's not afraid of anything except this puppy. He seems to be intimidated by her, and she's only been here 2 days.
Well, you know,
Teddy's
plan.
Brent, dogs, if you treat them nice, they become a part of you. I don't have to tell you that. His plans are whatever I plan, he's planning. You know what I mean? We're going to fly home tomorrow back to where I live in San Francisco, and I'm going to make my own turkey in my own house because I like to cook on Thanksgiving. And believe me, the dog will get plenty of his, I give him the turkey liver, generally. That day, I cook the liver, and I cook the pipic of the, I don't know what part of it, the cloaca of the turkey. It's the part that people don't eat. You know that tough part of the turkey gizzard that people throw in the garbage? Except talk show hosts from New York and the Chinese who know what's good for them. I eat those parts of the animal. The only part that I can't get are chicken legs. because the poultry farms give them away to the soup companies. What's your plan for Thanksgiving, Brent? I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty Thanksgiving.
Nice, simple Thanksgiving holiday with my mom and dad here in Arizona.
Well, that's very beautiful. Stay in the line. You're going to have a present sent out to you, TUP. Nancy, Portland, Oregon, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I loved your story, Michael. I have three dogs and a cat, two rescues, and a purebred Labrador.
You know, there's a story came out today, a group of scientists in England. I don't know if there's such a thing anymore, not after the East Anglia global warming hoax, but a scientist in England has studied dogs and cats, and he's came out and said definitively dogs are smarter than cats.
Yeah, I did hear that, but they don't know Jack.
No, especially British scientists today. I agree with you.
Jack is 16 pounds. He's a perfect tuxedo. And he, I mean, you know, I'm telling you, Michael, he's not a fat cat. He's a big cat. And he walks through the room.
What do you think about the woman, the drug addicted woman who rolled over on a baby and killed it? Why do you think that they will not press charges against her? Isn't it because she was in a homeless shelter and they didn't want to be seen as mean, pursuing a charge against the poor homeless woman?
Michael, I have a sad story of my own. I had a 5-year-old son who was born premature. He lived for 5 years. He was stolen by his father. And the day before I was to receive him back, his dad had taken him off his medication as soon as he found out that they were, because his dad grabbed him and ran, you know, kidnapped him.
Oh, God. What happened when he was taken off his meds? What happened?
They did nothing to his dad. But his
No. You said your ex-husband took the child off the meds. What happened to the child?
He died.
Oh, God.
He died of heart failure.
And I thought I was going to go from a sad story to a happy one. Now I'm depressed. Nancy, I'm sending you Trickle Up Poverty. It's all I've got for you. Now, I have a question for those listening to the show. I'm having you can call it anything you want. It's an open mic to Mike Day. I'm going to play a lot of rock and roll. We're going to tell pet stories. We're going to talk about family because that's what this is all about. And even if you don't have your own family, this is a vicarious thrill to listen to family stories. Look, I got to tell you something. I'm basically a loner at this point in my life. I'm kind of in my own world. I come down here, it's filled with friends and family, people coming and going, three dogs in the house. The minute I get off the radio show, I'm going to run from the radio studio back to the house I'm staying in. There's going to be 20 people, young women, young men. Then we're all jumping into a bus, some kind of, like a party bus, and we're going to the Staples Center to see the Lakers game up in one of the... This is so not me that I'm liable to enjoy myself. That's what worries me. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, Bebop Luna, she's my baby. Bebop Luna, I don't mean my baby. Bebop Luna.
Welcome back to America's soon-to-be favorite radio show, the Michael Savage Show. That's a strange thing. What do you mean soon-to-be favorite? play that. Come on. They can't hear me. Guys, come on. Bebop Luna by Gene Vincent.
Clearly she's the gal in the
room. You hear a song like this, you know what America is. Before it was ruined, destroyed by multiculturalism. You didn't have to press one for English when Bebopalula was popular. Let's put it to you that way. All right, turn it on. In other words, when you came here from another country, when in Rome, you did as the Romans do. You didn't try to turn Rome into the third world garbage can you came from while collecting welfare. I saw a great movie last night called Crazy Heart with Jeff Bridges. Everyone went out. I was home alone like the kid left home. I didn't want to go out. I was tired after the show. I came back. I said, no, go without me. They didn't invite me anyway. They had a business meeting. They didn't exactly say come to the restaurant. So I said, no, go along without me. In other words, no one invited me. No, you'll be fine. So I stayed in. I was exhausted. I ate leftovers. I didn't even want to eat. And you know how you lay in bed sometimes? I told you I'd do that after show. I give everything to this show. I click, 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 and there's Crazy Heart. Jeff Bridges, about a country and western singer who's an Elkie, and a love affair with this woman, Gyllenhaal, who's not very pretty, but she was perfect for the role. She was believable. It was an amazingly touching movie. I mean, Jeff Bridges is an astounding actor. In fact, I think I want Jeff Bridges to play me in my life story, but that's another story. I want Martin Scorsese to direct it, and I want Jeff Bridges to play me. The only thing I'm looking for is to who's going to play my enemies. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Walla Walla, Washington. Pete, welcome to the program.
Michael, hi. I was calling to thank you so much for Trickle Up Poverty. I picked it up yesterday at the bookstore, so I didn't contribute to the number one status, but I'm doing my part to help. But thank you so much.
What's going to happen is on Friday, the people are going to flood to buy gifts for the holidays. I know that it's going to have a huge sale because a lot of people were waiting to buy it for their relatives, and I think Friday we're going to see a new life, certainly, because the book was written for 2012 as well as for the elections in 2010. Look, there's a lot in there, isn't there? I don't want to like get stuck on talking about the book, but it's a great work.
I understand.
Hey, by the way, I'm sorry you brought it up. It's like triggering me. A review came out about my book that I put up on my website that I'm not going to read to you, but please go look at this new review. It's astounding. And so, I mean, I don't want to read it because they call me a genius and this and that. And I, it's bad when a guy calls himself a genius. So I'll send you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Stay in the line. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Let us go to Palm Beach. Joe, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Joe?
How you doing, Mike? I just want to thank you. I've been a Democrat since 1987, and by listening to your show and reading your first couple of books, you really opened my eyes, and my whole family now listens to your show every night, and
wow.
I wanted to thank you. I haven't
You
read...
mean I've converted a family of liberals in South Florida to something American? How did I do that?
Well, my mom and me, once I started listening to it, my mom started listening.
Where do you listen out of WFTL in Fort Lauderdale?
No, I'm in West Palm. It's 840.
Up there in the golfer's backyard.
That's right. That's right. But I read the first couple of books and started.
Have you read Tup yet?
Excuse me?
Have you read Tup yet?
Your new one? No, I haven't read that.
Okay,
yet.
It's going out to you tomorrow.
I'm so young and you're so old. This, my darling, I've been told. I don't care just what they say, 'cause forever I will pray.
It is the Savage Nation blasting out live from Los Angeles to the rest of America. Sounded good. Sounded like a radio show. Normally it's like a seance. I don't do a radio show. I basically do a confessional. It's as though I'm inside a Catholic priest confessional booth and you're the priest. You know that's what it's like? It's like one of those booths. I'm like on the other side of the booth and I'm telling you like my innermost feelings. I mean, within limits. More or less, it's just an open, thing into my head. But that sounded like radio, just to show you I could do radio if I really wanted to. But if I did radio the way that sounded, you wouldn't listen. It would sound like every other radio show, that's all. Here's a little news for you on the Savage Nation. TSA has now said that flight attendants can also skip scanners. Flight attendants are going to be able to board a plane without a body scan or pat-down, just like the pilots at TSA said. That's good. Saudi prince buys 1% of General Motors. That's right. Your good friends from Saudi Arabia have just invested $500 million in Obama Motors. And bought $500 million, or 1% of Obama's initial public offering of General Motors. I don't know whether that's good or bad either. You know, some of these stories, you don't know whether they're good or bad, to be honest with you. It's a sucker bet anyway. What does it mean? Actually, King from Saudi Arabia arrives in New York for medical tests. That's another story. You don't know whether it's good or bad. The only thing you know is that the Saudi came to New York to be treated in a New York hospital, which is unnamed, no doubt with a Jewish doctor, which they won't report either. How come they can't create a doctor in a hospital in Saudi Arabia with their trillions of dollars? You ever figure that one out? With everything they've built, with all the money in the world, why is it they have to come to New York and be treated by a Hebrew? Why is that? And there, of course, is Mayor Doomberg genuflecting in front of the king. What's he supposed to do? He's thrilled, a guy with a talentless idiot like him in favor of the Ground Zero Mosque. Even the king doesn't want the Ground Zero Mosque in Manhattan. I can guarantee you he knows it's a provocation. But don't tell that to Bloomberg. Saudi King arrives in New York for medical tests. I could spend hours talking about that. That touches on so many aspects of what's going on in our world and country today. And some of them are apparent and some of them are not. Here you got the liberal morons trying to destroy the world's greatest medical system and turn it into a socialized third world medical system. And here we have the king coming here, where he didn't choose to go to Cuba. How come the Saudi king didn't go to Cuba for a Cuban medical care? Why didn't he go to Hugo Chavez's Venezuela for a little medical care? You know the answer to it. That's all. I'd have to spell it out for you. Saudi king arrives in New York for medical tests. I started by talking about puppies. Saudi king arrives in New York for medical tests. Blah, blah, blah. And he turned over the country's affairs to a much younger man. As you know, the 86-year-old monarch has left for the medical tests, as we said. But before he left his kingdom, he turned over the affairs of state to a much younger half-brother. He's 85 years old, which is very important for you to know. But the 85-year-old Sultan has his own health problems. He also underwent surgery in New York in February of 2009 for an undisclosed illness. And then he recuperated at a palace in Agadir, Morocco. But they all come to America for treatment. Why is that? Why? Because they're not stupid. I spoke to a man today at breakfast, okay? I had breakfast in the Polo Lounge here, and I'm not trying to, you know, impress you, but I was amazed by the people I saw in the Polo Lounge. I'm a quiet guy, actually. I'm not an entertainment guy, but I had breakfast in the Polo Lounge about a movie with someone. It's not important. So I mentioned the story about the king coming to New York for treatment, probably by a Jewish doctor, and he laughed. And he said, look, I am deeply involved in the government, both with Republicans and Democrats. And he said, if I could tell you how many Saudis I have known over the years who come to America for medical treatment, and how many of the best doctors in Los Angeles are flown to Saudi Arabia on a regular basis, you'd be quite surprised. I said, no, I wouldn't be quite surprised. They weren't asking for the best doctors from the University of Havana. That's all. That's neither here nor there. It's just a chat. We're just chatting. We're having a conversation. It's a conversation with me doing the talking and you doing the listening. That's what I call as a perfect conversation. Not easy to live with a talk show host, I got to tell you. Really not easy. You turn off the microphone and you still think you're on the air and no one wants to listen to you. The only difference is that there's no commercials in regular life. Let us play Not the Book of Love. I have this. Do you mind that I play? I'm going to poll the audience. I play old rock and roll like from the 50s. Now, I realize it dates me. I realize that. But does the audience mind that? Or is everyone old and halfway in the grave? Or do even younger people like old rock and roll? Because there is a rule in radio. I'll tell you what the rule is. No, I'm not going to tell you. Because people listen to me and then they copy it. I don't know. What should I play? Like trying to be cool? Like music that's current? Chick music? Whiny chick music that you hear in elevators and department stores? Everywhere you go in America, there are no baritones left except rap, you know, singing. I don't listen to rap. You know, hieroglyphics were more advanced as far as I'm concerned. So I don't listen to rap music. I don't care for it. It's not my thing. If it's yours, God, good for you, okay? I don't care for it. But a lot of guys play music that isn't even them. This is sort of a part of my life, so I enjoy it. I do play heavy metal, that is true. But you want me to go to the other side, I can play opera. Then you're getting into the pseudo-intellectual, you're trying to act like you're in a big deal. That's for me to play Long Tall Sally by Little Richard. Then you'll understand why I like old rock and roll. He must have had a long time. There you go. Everything that Uncle John need, oh baby. Yeah, baby. Crazy man. Ooh, baby, a lot of musicians. Yeah, you're going to have some fun tonight. It's beautiful. It's like urban storytelling when this guy did it. The guy was writing a story telling you what was going on. He met a tall chick. She had a boyfriend. The boyfriend tried to kill her, and he's looking to have a good time with her. That's all. And he made music out of it and bought a Cadillac. Oh, I want to hear that. Wait, loud, loud, loud. That's what I want to hear. Nobody can play the saxophone like that. Oh, yes. One of the things I always wanted to do, there's a couple of things I've wanted to do that I've never done. I don't regret it. It wasn't my path. What if I had been a gifted saxophone player when I was six? I'd be a busted-out musician like in Crazy Heart somewhere with some busted out woman falling in love with me in a bowling alley. I mean, what good would that do for me? You know what I'm saying? So it's just as well I had no talent in the musical area. Well, what if I had proficiency with languages? I would be a translator in the UN, probably dating a Russian spy. What good would that have done me by now? So it turns out I'm lucky that I had the gifts I have and certain proficiencies I had and certain I don't. I'm not particularly good with languages, for example. I am excellent with math. I can add and subtract long figures quickly in my head without a calculator. Why? Why? Because my father was an immigrant who taught me everybody will rob you unless you learn how to add quickly and subtract quickly and multiply quickly in your head, and there were no calculators in those days. He made me, punished me mentally. He got mad at me, made me feel small and insignificant unless I could do it. Was he bad for doing that? No, he'd rather be your son. Your son, you'd rather have it. He feels good about himself. He's not worked a day in his life. He's 42, and he lives in your apartment, but he has great self-esteem. That's what you would have wanted for a son? I read a story this morning. It triggered this. It's a sad story. It came out of Miami. Here's the story. The father's like 65. He has a deadbeat son, 42, who's living with him all his life in an apartment, a condo. The son never worked, never made payments. So the father went to court a year ago to throw his son out of the apartment. The court agreed with the father. The son still wouldn't leave. So today or yesterday, the father shows up at the door of the condo. You know what's coming already. With a Miami cop, a poor illegal immigrant who they had to open the lock, and someone else, and the moron 42-year-old son comes blasting the minute the door opens with a .357. Who gets killed? The illegal alien. I mean, it's heartbreaking. Who'd they put in front? Not the cop. They put the illegal alien. He opened the lock, and he got shot. Look what you could have with a child, I said to myself. You have no idea. You got to count your blessings. Which leads me to another story about counting your blessings. None of us do. We live in a perennial want. I want this. I want that. Why isn't this? Why isn't that? We don't have this. We don't have that. I don't want to sound hokey about it, but I mean, it's hard for me to count my blessings. There's a part of me that doesn't do that. I'm always asking God. I'm always like not asking. I know not to ask for anything from God because you get the opposite usually. I don't ask him for anything. I thank him. When I think about God, I say, thank you. That's all I say. Thanks for the teeth I still have left. Thanks for the hair I still have left. No, everything works in me. My plumbing is perfect. Everything works like I'm 17. In fact, I'm very lucky in that. I should knock wood. Teddy, no one's. I knocked under the dog's. If I go to see a doctor, let's say for a checkup or whatever it is, a little. He says the first thing I look at the chart. They look at the wall. They don't look in your eyes. They don't look at you. They don't touch your face. The guy's looking at the wall with a chart next to him with a pencil, and he's looking at the wall like he's asking the wall a question. Call about depersonalized medicine. And he says to me, all right, what medications are you on? I said, none. He said, what? I said, none. How could you not be on medications? Men your age are supposed to be on 8 medications. I said, none. How much surgery have you had? Tonsillitis at age 5. Impossible. You're supposed to have a replacement heart. You're supposed to have a replacement leg. You're supposed to have replaced your knee by now. None. So I'm saying thank you, Lord. In my own way, that's my way of saying thank you. What should I do? Not be thankful? So in other words, you have to be thankful for certain things. Now let's go to the callers. Craig in Bakersfield, welcome to the Savage Nation. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. You might find this odd, but I kind of consider you to be like my grandfather by proxy. Your stories and wisdom, I feel they kind of provide me with an element which I missed out on. That was the auxiliary development which grandparents normally provide. Both of my grandparents on my... Well, my father's side, he died about a year before I was born, and my mother's grandfather, I only got to see him for about 1 month when I was about 8 years old, so you can't really...
That's an interesting point, Craig. How old a man are you?
I'm 39.
You want to hear something odd? I never had a grandfather that I met. They were all dead before I met him. I always wanted a grandfather. I have terrible lineage on the male side. Everyone died of a heart attack in the old country, the new country, the ex-old, the old country. So I always thought that I'd never live past like 39 myself. I figured it was like a genetic, you know, defect. Everyone had a heart attack. So I went into the field of nutrition. I got my PhD. I spent many years searching the jungles of the South Seas looking for cures. I cannot say I found anything that people didn't already know. But at a certain point, you have to understand that maybe you're doing something right. It doesn't mean tomorrow, you know, something might not happen. But I did miss a grandfather. I had grandmothers. I never had a grandfather. They both, unfortunately, died very young. It's a very interesting role to play in the media in America, by the way, Craig.
But actually do it extremely well. And
isn't it odd though that if you say grandfather, it's considered like old, passé. Is there any love for a person who's a little older and has wisdom in this country?
Well, this is the thing, is that there's this worship of youth, and that we are in a hedonistic society which basically bows down and says, well, you know, youth is the way of the world, and actual fact is...
Wait a minute, hold on now. Just because I may be grandfatherly doesn't mean I'm not a hedonist. Don't confuse the they're not mutually exclusive. In fact, one of the reasons I think I'm still living is I am a hedonist.
Oh, well, I mean, come on. I mean, you have
come
enough...
Come on, man. I defy... 5 years ago, I went on the radio and I said that I am a conservative hedonist. No one understood what I was talking about. What does hedonism mean? Is I love pleasure, right? It doesn't mean I'm amoral because I love pleasure. You can have a lot of pleasure without being amoral, correct?
Yeah, okay. I'll
see, now, that was a funny line which you laughed at because it took a certain degree of knowledge to even understand the joke.
Well, I can't. Well, I can say I understand where you're coming from, yes.
Well, so, I do. No, let me ask you something. Does a man have to be anti-pleasure in order to be grandfatherly?
No, they don't have to be. But, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I'm just thinking in terms of just getting back to an earlier point. I'm not trying to avoid your answer here, Dr. Savage, but, I mean, you mentioned in regards to, you know, why does the left like to make everyone feel bad about growing old in the sense of, and
yes.
While I was waiting on hold, I thought this for a moment, the left have a narrow spectrum and their defense is extremely narrow, and they have very little to defend with. And so what they do is they can only thrive in the element of what they have, and it's the meaning in their attacks.
Well, let me ask you this. If you were to divide the country, liberal, conservative, which group do you think would have more respect for the elderly? Would it be the liberal or would it be the conservative?
Of course it's going to be conservative, Dr. Martin.
Yes, it would be. That is right, because the conservative respects tradition. Tradition implies wisdom. Tradition and wisdom usually are associated with a certain age. I don't mean aged, and I don't mean infirm. I mean a certain age. The liberal, on the other hand, is usually oriented to a drug, sex, and rock and roll. They're generally red diaper doper babies who have absolutely nothing but contempt for people that they can't use.
You have a look at the only elderly which they respect are your sort of deviants like William Burroughs or Timothy Leary.
Oh, now you're triggering me when you say William Burroughs or Timothy Leary. I can speak voluminously about both of them. You see, that deep laugh of yours tells me there's something more to your call than meets the eye. Are you an ex-hippie yourself?
Let's just say that, I mean, obviously I can't say that I lived on Haight-Ashbury, but I've come from a progressive past, and sort of through your radio show I've kind of more attuned myself and understanding in terms of conservative thought and understanding that, you know, there is a lot of longevity and a lot of truth in it.
Are you Australian by birth?
I'm Australian by birth, but American citizen. I'm an American with an Australian accent, not like a Mel Gibson, you could say, but a better...
Yeah, no, I picked up on it. I was glad I got that right. Well, let me send you a free copy of my smash bestseller, Trickle Up Poverty, and please remain a regular caller to the show. I really appreciate the wit and wisdom of callers like yourself. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Where are you, little star?
I loved this song when I was a kid. I loved it. I don't know why I loved this song. There's something about it. All right, look, I could just do rock and roll all day also. Instead of talking about Love Taps by the TSA or, you know, how much can you take of that anyway? Why does it die out when I talk? You can't mix the two? Don't know how to mix songs with a voice? You're a good board operator, Charles. Come on now, get with it. Man using Bob Dylan backstage pass orders 178 pizzas at Stiff's restaurant. Now you could turn it off. Amherst, Mass. A man wearing a Bob Dylan backstage pass who ordered 178 pizzas from Master's Pizza Parlor has left the restaurant blowing in the wind. The man walked into the pizza parlor in the college town of Amherst shortly after Dylan performed at the University of Massachusetts and ordered $3,900 worth of pizzas? He said he would return in several hours and deliver them to Dylan's crew, but he never returned. Oh, that's horrible. Restaurant employees stayed until 5:30 in the morning making the pizzas. That's horrible. Who would do a thing like this? What kind of schmuck would do a thing like this? Why hurt the working man? What kind of moron gets off on a cowardly thing like this, I'd like to know. The second question is, why is Bob Dylan still schlepping around and performing at universities? It's an interesting story when you consider this man's fame and pop. The man had power like you can't believe. He's still performing at his age. Amazing. What am I talking about? I'm the same age I'm performing. Well, the difference is that he was performing when I wasn't performing. He should have been through performing already. Well, I wasn't performing, and now I am performing in a later stage of my life. So it's logical that I'm still performing because I only started performing 16 years ago. 16 years ago, he stopped performing, and now he's performing still. That's the whole point. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, Chicago. Kendall, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, what I enjoy most about your program is you take the serious topics of the day and you dissect them with laser-like precision, but with equal precision you talk about boating and cars and puppies, and you make my 45-minute ride home seem like it's about 5 minutes.
Well, in Chicago, that's saying an awful lot. That's a heck of a ride. But you're not in the car right now. Are you home already?
I'm home already, yes.
And what do you do when you get home? How do you unwind?
Well, I've got three beautiful kids and a wonderful wife, which kind of led me to the reason why I called initially is because your story about the dog. We recently got a puppy, and I had dogs all my life as a kid, but as an adult, I haven't had one, and we recently got one. And it really added, I think, that missing element to our family. And
let me put this in your mind. I know time is short. A dog adds love to a home. A dog, in fact, brings out the love that's in people. In fact, even a couple that does already when the children and they don't have much left in them that's sweet and loving, a dog is the unifier, brings out love. Even if it's the individual giving love to the dog, then the other individual giving love to the dog, at least you see in the other person the kindness that's still left, even though it's for a dog. At least you know it's a remnant and it's there.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation.
To the sea of love. I want to tell you.
It is Michael Savage with the special pre-Thanksgiving show. And we all can't wait already for the day. Then, of course, the shopping, then the Saturday depression, the Sunday despair, and the Monday gloom. But that's what happens, you know, you got to go through it anyway. What are you going to do? Families get together, and then you expect more than there's going to be there, but what are you going to do? You have such expectations for it. Rarely is it what you expect. We all know that. Some of you are lucky to have everything you dream of, but most you have the turkey, and it's before you finish with it, you watch television. But that's, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to change life? It's like Obama, full of hope, full of promise, and symbol shot. So I can go on with the one-liners, but I'm not Henny Youngman, so let's go back to the everyday show on the Savage Nation. We were talking about a number of things. The puppy flown in for someone, but we're going to take him home, and now I'm stuck with a new dog that I didn't plan on because puppies are so... See, puppies are made to be engaging. Puppies are created by nature to be so engaging that you don't kill them. I mean, they make everywhere. They're a mess. They bark. Why would you keep them alive if they weren't cute? It's the same with children, basically. The reason women, like, got together in ancient days and hung out and kept the men away, like with fire in the mouth of the cave, I mean, don't be confused. There was no nuclear family in the cave. Don't fall for that malarkey. The caves basically were filled with women and children fearing the men coming in to rape them and kill the babies. So the women learn with a fire in the mouth of the cave and with fire sticks to keep the evil man away. That's how it all started. Then occasionally there was a guy who wasn't as bad as the others. They let him in once in a while. He hung around with one of them. And then the rest is history. That's how it all began. I mean, that's how life began, basically. But now we have the situation that we have today, and we're living under a completely different circumstance. And it works in its own crazy way when you think about it. It actually works when you actually think about it. Things are very good. Despite the fact that we have a communist in the White House, and people don't know what they're doing at every level of government, the nation seems to survive. North Korea launches artillery attack on island in South Korea. Oh, you expected something different from Kim Jong mentally ill. You expected something different from Kim Jong mentally ill. Lowest ever Obama job approval sinks to 39%. No. You expected something different? Now he's going to get desperate. Sells arms to Saudi Arabia last week without anyone knowing. Fearless genius Michael Savage on what's trickling from Obama. That's a new review. You got to read it. I'm not going to read it because you'll think I'm being self-aggrandizing, and I would be. Because Savage is unafraid. He is able to frame his worldview in terms that better capture the essence of what we're up against, says Jim Fletcher. I am afraid. See, people say you feel. I'm not fearless. I fear for the future, which is why I tell you the truth. See, people don't understand this. It's on WorldNet Daily by Jim Fletcher. It's a fabulous review. And he says, Michael Savage is indeed fearless. But I'm not fearless. He says, in any event, a new book by Michael Savage is a real treat, especially for those of us who believe the country is in serious trouble at the hands of the man from Kenya. Savage, who has no qualms about calling Obama a Marxist, outlines several issues needing immediate attention if history's greatest democratic experiment is to survive. In his latest book, Trickle Up Poverty, Stopping Obama's Attack on Our Borders and Economic Security, Savage reveals some startling information, and then he lists it. And then he says, because Savage is unafraid, sadly an uncommon trait even among today's leading conservatives, he is able to frame his worldview in terms of that better capture the essence of what we're up against. I am afraid. I am very afraid of what's going to happen unless we all become truthful. That's the whole point. As with anything Savage does, in Trickle Up Poverty, he employs his famous wit in revealing disturbing truths. In fact, another point of courage in this book is his identification of the Bilderberg Group as a secretive organization whose activities from its inception in 1954 remain hidden from both press and public scrutiny. After all, Savage writes, the Bilderberg Group isn't a bunch of average blue-collar guys working the night shift at a bowling alley. A growing number of Americans are realizing that raising such issues is no longer fringe. It's very nicely reviewed. I don't know the gentleman, but I want to thank Jim for that great review. It's on WorldNet Daily. Check it out for yourself. And help send America a message on Friday, will you please, and buy a copy, finally, if you haven't already. Let's go to the callers right now on the Savage Nation. Delray Beach, Liz, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I'd just like to thank you for saving me a speeding ticket. I was pulled over on Friday night in Highland Beach, and it's a notorious speed trap, and the officer pulled me over. I have a Beetle with a surfboard on it. I'm sure he was expecting something else. But as he came up to the window, I was blasting your show, sir. And he took my license. He went back to the car. He came back, and he said, I'm not going to ruin your night. I said, why? And he said, because you were listening to Dr. Savage.
Well, we shouldn't even say the name of the town. I'm glad it was in North Carolina, not in Florida. But, yeah, I think a lot of officers of the law understand what's at stake. They are on the front lines, and they know I'm their greatest supporter, Liz. That's a great story. What's this with the surfer sticker? You have a surfer sticker on your car?
I had a surfboard on the car and a bunch of stickers.
Oh, you're a surfer. You're a surfer gal.
I'm a surfer gal down here in Florida, and I'm sure he was expecting something else, but you really got me off the ticket.
How are the waves down in those beaches? They look pretty calm most of the time, but occasionally you'll get a little roller, right?
No, we've had some real swells lately. We've had, 10 feet waves, actually. It's calmed down a little bit this week.
How many years have you been surfing?
Almost 7. I'm still not great yet because I only do the Florida waves. But I'm learning, and I love it. It's great exercise.
It's a very beautiful sport. I was in Hawaii for a number of years. I came to appreciate it. You know, the normal New Yorker view is that everyone who surfs is a dummy and a pothead. It's completely the reverse, by the way. It's an amazing field of endeavor.
It's an unbelievable. And can I just tell you one thing, sir, before you? I want to tell you how grateful I am for you on Thanksgiving here. But I almost feel sorry for you because you're so amazing and you're so good. Like, we're so used to you. We're so used to you going from politics to blowing gas at the airport to dogs. And no one gets, like, how great that really is. Like, you can't talk to an average Joe and get that. You can't talk to your best friends and get that. And it's just like... It's a couple hours.
So you really enjoy the whole gestalt of my show. You know what I'm doing.
Most people don't get like how unbelievable it is to be able to do that.
Well, we can get into this, but Liz, as a surfer, what you are is you're in tune with the rhythms of nature, correct?
Yes, I am.
All right, so am I. The point is that I'm reflecting. I'm a natural man, and natural men sometimes pulse in strange ways, and I mean that in a very direct, not comedic or slimy manner. The fact is that what I'm sending out to you is what's natural to me. That's what I'm getting at.
And that's what I pick up, and that's what I so enjoy.
See, but I think what you're doing is you're surfing my mental waves. Isn't that what you're doing?
I am. I'm surfing your mental waves, and it's unbelievable. When I can't get on the waves, I'm surfing your waves. So thank you.
So but down in Florida, like, are you a woman in your 30s? How old are you?
I am. I'm a woman at 38.
It's a tough age for a woman. I don't mean to be sarcastic. That's a very tough age for a woman. No matter how beautiful a woman is in her mid-30s, with the crop of youngsters coming up and the loose morality in the country, it's a very hard age bracket to be in if you're single. I don't know if you're single or not. I'm not prying. Are you alone?
It's tough because down here with the Alpha Cockers, you know, I got the 65-year-olds picking up on me, and yet the surfer boys are too dumb.
Oh, well, they are dumb. I thought that some of them were smart. I mean, what are they all potheads down there? All dopers?
They're not all dopers. Some of them are yuppies. They go out in their surfboards or their kayaks. Well,
Liz, what do you do other than surf? I mean, do you have a profession?
I do, sir. I actually run a pet sitting business.
Wait, a what business?
A pet sitting service.
A pet sitting business?
Yes.
See, if you were a psychiatric nurse, I would propose to you, but since you aren't, I...
No, I'm sorry, I'm not, but I run a pet... I could take care of Teddy.
I'll tell you what, Liz, I do need someone in that area occasionally when I'm down there to watch the dog. If you're not a complete nut, I have to check you out. How can we check out if you're a legitimate person and not a nut?
You can check us out, and I'm not going to give you the website. But...
No. I'll tell you what, guys, take down Liz's email... And we will communicate with Liz. Teddy, you want to go with Liz? Teddy said yes, Liz. You're in business. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Any topic except the TSA on the program today. I'd rather talk about the PSA test than about the TSA, frankly. If you've got a controversial PSA number after a recent blood test, give me a ring, and we can talk about PSA tests, but I will not talk about the TSA. I mean, I'm kind of fed up with it. What do you want them to do at this point? We've all had our fun. We know there's a lot of nuts involved in some of it. What would you like it? I mean, how do you want to deal with this? How do you want to? No, see, I'm doing it. I shouldn't have done it. Call me with your PSA number better than the TSA test. I said that already. 1-800-449-8255. Would you like to talk about beluga caviar or dogs, cats? I don't. I'll take your calls instead. Steve in Virginia, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I love the music. You gotta keep it going. I grew up listening to... I'm only 42, and I can't tell you the artist, but I know every single song that you bump with, including the heavy metal, newer stuff. It's crazy.
Right. And I do love the heavy metal. I particularly like German heavy metal. There's a harder edge to it than most of our own, I think. But I haven't played any of the Rammstein. Are they still around, Rammstein, by the way?
Somewhere in Germany, I don't know.
Yeah, I never hear them. But you do like the 50s rock and roll. I mean, I find it to be very beautiful music.
It's awesome because those guys back then they knew what music was all about. They knew the 1-4-5 structure. They knew music. They could deal with telling stories and expecting people to sit back and actually listen to it and understand.
Now that's a very interesting statement that you just made, that the music that we are listening to, known as rock and roll of that era, basically was storytelling set to a musical structure. But they were telling little stories, is what they were. They were ballads in many ways.
Absolutely.
Or poems set to music.
Absolutely.
For example, here's what I'm looking at. Not Book of Love. I'm looking for one there. They're all about tragedy or love, as usual. But what's happened with music today where it's about violence and hate and anger and how that's held up as any kind of music, I'll never understand. And why anyone listens to it is just an example of the kind of, well, we don't have to even finish the paragraph to know what we're talking about, correct? Oh,
right.
Hey, guys, play Sorry I Ran All the Way Home by the Impalas. I love this song. Let's get that one ready. I'm sending you a copy, Steve, of Trickle Up Poverty. It's for reading for people 25 and older. 1-800-449-8255. It's on Rock and Roll Sheet 3. It's called
Sorry.
Love that song for some reason. All the plasma bottles in West Palm Beach are swinging on the trees. They're having wheelchair races in Boynton Beach because of this song. All the transfusion trees are having a transfusion tree in over in the park in Delray Beach. I have a weird sense of humor. You don't like it, what can I do? Do you want to become like you? Las Vegas, Mark, you on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage, I just wanted to tell you that I'm thankful that every day I turn my radio on and you're there and you're a voice of reason and that you've got the backbone to talk about the subjects that you do talk about. I'm also thankful that I got out of Iran in 1980 and that fiasco, and in 3 more months my son gets out of Afghanistan.
Wait, you got out of, did you say Iraq? I didn't catch that. Say it again.
No, I the attempted hostage rescue in 1980.
Oh, the Jimmy Carter fiasco.
Yeah, to this day.
You agree with me that it was Jimmy Carter who brought the metastasis of radical Islam to the world?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. How many Americans understand that it was Jimmy Carter who undermined the Shah of Iran and permitted the maniac, Ayatollah Khomeini, to come back from exile in Paris where he was sent, that was the reason that radical Islam has now metastasized around the globe? It was Jimmy Carter who did it.
You are exactly right, and you're also exactly right in the fact that not very many people understand that. We have what we have now because of, as you put it, and I love it, liberalism as a sickness, and I believe it really did start with Carter. And
I don't know when it started, but I know that Jimmy Carter definitely metastasized the illness of radical Islam. He could have contained it. He could have supported the Shah of Iran. Instead, he undermined our greatest ally in that part of the world. He destroyed Iran. He forced the entire middle class of Iran to flee the country, and the rest is a nightmare of dark history. Let me send you a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. I actually cover a little bit of that somewhere in that book. Very few people know how dangerous Jimmy Carter actually is to the survival of women and children, in my opinion. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to New York City, WRL. You're next up on the Savage Nation. Al, go ahead, please.
Hey, how are you doing, Dr. Savage? I wanted just to tell you that I really enjoy your show, and I really loved what you said when you said that you got to thank God. I want you to know that my whole life has changed since I've only focused on thanking God instead of complaining and whining and with everything that's
why going. Have things gotten better?
Only better. I'm telling you, Dr. Savage, I've only seen blessing. Wonderful things started happening.
Isn't that amazing? You're not the first person to say this, you know. This is the devout Christian will tell you the same thing. The devout Jew will tell you the same thing. Why do you think that these devout people do this day in and day out? You think they're not getting something back from God for it? You think they're doing it because they enjoy the prohibitions? They're doing it because they feel the blessings in their life. It's because they feel the betterment in their life. People don't understand that.
Savage.
Come on, baby, let the good time roll. Come on, baby, let me thrill your soul. Come on, baby, let the good time roll. Roll on.
It is the Savage Nation, the pre-Thanksgiving program. It just came out. A U.S. general has said conventional forces can deter North Korea. U.S. military official, whoever that is, said that conventional forces in South Korea should be sufficient to deter aggression from Pyongyang. The U.S. still has 28,000 troops in South Korea. The U.S. Air Force has substantial capabilities on the Korean Peninsula and in the immediate environs, said General Norton Schwartz, the Air Force Chief of Staff. He told that to reporters at a breakfast this morning. The Air Force has deterrent qualities that certainly the North Koreans must respect. Yeah, we'll tell that to them. When you have one side with a lot of weapons, powerful weapons, advanced weapons, and tremendous technology, run by technocrats who are afraid of their own shadow, looking over their shoulder, reading manuals on what they can and cannot do, worrying if they're violating anyone's rights before they even so much as tell a soldier to put a bullet inside a gun. And on the other side, you have a man with fewer weapons but a million fanatics with fixed bayonets. I don't necessarily think that the general is correct. I hope he is. I hope he is, but I'm not so sure he is, by the way. New York City mosque developers seek post-9/11 federal funds. Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? Why does Sarah Palin disturb so many? I'm not going there. I don't care about Sarah Palin. She's overexposed. She's overexposed. I told you she can't win. They run Palin, you have Obama again. Period, end of story. I've told you that. And I'm not Hammerhead. I mean, Wallbanger. I don't care what Wallbanger says. He's only a mouthpiece for what the Republicans tell him to say. Sarah Palin is why McCain lost the election. Okay? I know this to be a fact. I've analyzed it. I told you that McCain had this one thing that people liked. I even met Democrats who have told me they were ready to vote for McCain because he was a reliable, middle-of-the-road kind of plodding guy. And the minute he picked Palin, that was the end of the road, and they went to Obama. I told you that. I don't care that she has good politics. She can't win. That's all there is to it. And what she has done since that election has not made her even more palatable to the American people. It has made her less palatable. It does not mean I don't think she's a wonderful person. She probably is. It doesn't mean that I don't think her politics are good. I think they are, but I don't think she can win. I'm a pragmatist at the end of the day. So 1-800-449-8. Teddy, stop it. I'm on radio, Teddy. This is a live show. Just cut it out. Dogs don't really respect anything. San Diego, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Hi. I'm calling concerning your music.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah.
Just keep
I'm glad
mind.
You love it, and I understand you're a music major.
I am a music major. Yes, I am.
And what are you studying? What type of...
I've retired from music. I was an opera singer.
Oh, my God.
Started my opera career when I was 8.
Do you think I could learn? I don't mean to become not famous. That's impossible. Could you think that at this point in my life, you listen to my voice because you know I have a great voice. Thank God. It's a God-given talent. It's a gift. Let's put it that way. Do you think I could learn to sing the most rudimentary arias?
No. But I bet you could sing Amore from Dean Martin.
Why couldn't I learn how to sing a little Pagliacci? Why couldn't I do it?
If you studied about Pagliacci and the party that wrote it, which would have been Puccini and Verdi, those are the two in the opera lineup that studied and wrote music. So that's
I didn't ask you that. I said, why couldn't I learn to sing a simple part of operas, as men will do and have done from time immemorial? Why couldn't
that's
I learn
true.
That?
Well, if you know Latin, which is the basic of all European languages, you could pick up Italian.
What Latin? I know how to order calamari in Italian restaurants. What do I need to know a Latin for?
No, I wanted to call you.
If I could go into an Italian restaurant in San Francisco, go over to my friend Richie or Joe in Alioto's, and once in a while throw a little lingo around, why couldn't I learn how to sing in Italian?
Get up. I don't know what your voice range is. I would have to study
it. All right, hold on. Give me a test. Tell me to do something right now. I'm going to do a test, a live test.
Okay, you're going to try to be a tenor?
I don't know. Tell me what to do.
A tenor is a high-pitched voice.
I asked. Don't set up a trick for me now.
I'm not.
You're asking a question. You're starting to sound like a wife already. You're asking a question. I don't answer. You already sound like you're trying to make me wrong before I even answered you. No, I don't mean to ask a question about like what it means. tell me what to do voice-wise in a song. Like, tell me to sing something so you could tell me what my voice is.
Okay.
Is my is my voice a tenor voice or not?
No.
What is it?
Your voice is very smooth. You would be in the range of Dean Martin or Frank Sinatra.
Well, I know. Wait, hold on. You see, you're not answering. You must be a liberal originally because you're not answering the question. I'm saying one thing and you're saying another. What voice would you describe my voice as? Tenor, baritone? What is my voice? Baritone?
You are a baritone.
I told you what it was, so now you said that's what it is. Are you calling from a bug house? Are you really a musical expert? Are you really a musical expert, or are you calling on the payphone in a nut house?
I beg your pardon?
Oh, come on. Take a joke. Give me a line or two in Italian to sing, and I'll sing it for you. You hung up? You got insulted? I don't mean to insult you. It's only radio.
I know. When the moon hits your eye...
Again, Dean, I don't want to do Dean Martin.
Okay. Well,
give me an Italian line from an opera to sing.
Oh, I don't have no music like that in front of me right now. Otherwise, I...
Well, so you pull on, you said you're an opera singer.
I was.
You not know Italian if you're an opera singer?
I know if it's in front of me.
All right, I could see. I didn't mean to embarrass you. I could see already why your husband left you years ago. It's not a very funny thing to talk about. Do your children still talk to you?
Excuse me, my husband's deceased.
I'm very sorry. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. I knew this was going bad from the get go. I'm sorry about that one. This went bad for them. When I said one and whatever, I said opera. She said Dean Martin. I said, what kind of voice? She says, you're not a tenor. I said, if I'm not a tenor, what am I? She said, you don't have a high pitched voice. I said, am I a baritone? That's right, you're a baritone. All right, get the orderlies. Call the orderlies. Now I was blamed already for her husband's demise. I mean, you cannot win with certain people. I felt like I was in a marriage of 20 years that went bad. In those 3 minutes, I sweat more than in a marriage of a certain number of decades. That was like a marriage that was unbelievable. Could you imagine every night sitting down at dinner in that conversation? All right, I feel bad for people who can't have a conversation. I'm not trying to denigrate that woman in any way. I'm sure she's a wonderful person. What else do you want to talk about? Puppies, women in caves with fire sticks, the Lakers game with the thing with the boy fell out, why they're not prosecuting the woman who rolled over on the baby with the heroin needle and methamphetamine in her blood, but they're prosecute the poor normal people whose child fell out of a booth at the Staples Center to show you how crazy governmental officials are. Frank in San Diego, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, I'm an opera singer, and yes, you can learn how to sing opera at your age with no problem. I did.
There you go. So that's all I am. So now let me ask you, you actually sing opera professionally or as a hobby?
I have sung opera professionally. I go to Milan every year through the opera season.
Now, you got a great voice. You got a wonderful range down there. What would your voice be defined as, though? Basso, what is it?
I'm a bass baritone, and you're a baritone.
You're a bass baritone. That's very interesting. Who is that black guy in the movies who has that greatest voice? They use him like he always plays like a general in a wheelchair who knows everybody and everything. What a voice he has. I don't know his name.
No, that's
out of left field. Then there's an Italian in the movie. Are you a fan of gangster movies at the same time that you're an opera fan?
Love gangster movies.
Okay. So maybe you'll know this character. I asked about it once before. The movie was made 20 years ago, Prince of the City. Remember that movie?
I do.
Okay. Who was the lead in that? I forget his name. He's not very big anymore.
I don't know, Michael.
Whatever. Okay, but there's a scene in it where a big Italian guy comes out of a restaurant. He's sitting in a coffee shop. He's about 6'5", a bear of a man, and he has a voice on him that resonates. You never hear guys with voices that the whole room resonates and he's just talking? He's not even yelling? What a voice. We looked him up on IMDb. We couldn't find the character. Can you give me two lines of an opera, let's say any opera, and I'll try to sing them. Tell me how I'm doing.
Well, how about if I sing something? You want something in Italian?
Yeah, of course. No, I'm going to sing it in Jewish.
Vito Kid?
Havanagila. I'm going to sing Havanagila Hava to you. Yeah, sing something and I'll try to copy you. that's pretty good. Give me some of the popular ones where I could probably follow along.
about bella gosa, na jornada.
Oh, what I wouldn't give to. Oh, that. Where's that from? What opera is that from?
That's O Solo Mio.
Do it again, one more time. I'm going to see if I can do it.
Do this. Do this. Che bella gosa.
Okay, did you say Che bella gosa?
Che bella gosa.
Che bella gosa, right?
Yeah.
We're not talking about Bella Lugosi.
How about O Solo Mio? O Solo Mio.
No, my voice will break up. Now I'm getting nervous. I can't do it.
But listen,
I have to do this in front of a mirror, practice a little bit. I could do this if I had the words in front of me in phonetics, in phoneticized, you know, words. I cannot do this on the radio. My mind is not computing because I'm trying to remember what you're doing, and I'm trying to control the radio show, and then I'm going to try and sing. It would be a disaster for me. So what makes you call tonight? Do you listen to the show regularly, Frank?
I've listened for 10 years. Easy.
Whoa.
So why don't I send you one of my CDs and you send me a Trickle Up?
Oh, that's a good trade. You're getting a book. But, Frank, hold on. I'm going to do that. I'm just sending you the book. Frank, it says that you're in San Diego and you listen to the show with your 98-year-old mother. Is that correct?
I actually live in Newport Beach with the San Diego station. My mother lives with me. She's 98. She grew up in Belmont Avenue in the Bronx.
Mm.
I moved her
so
in.
So I remind your mother of the kind of thinking that she was used to probably when she was, you know, there, right?
Pardon me?
I'm saying my worldview is closer to what your mother was used to when she was a younger woman, like 50. This is how she saw the world, right?
That's how she saw the world. It's the stories when I hear your stories, that's the stories I listen to when I grew up. We listen to you. I pick her up at the senior center, and we listen to you on the way home, and she laughs the whole way.
Even when I tell her about the tragedies of the world, she laughs. That's not a good sign.
Because she got that humor that she's used to. And I've listened to you for over 10 years. When I was my son was about 7, I'd have you on in the kitchen, be cooking, and he said, "Dad, let's listen to the Crazy Man. Is the Crazy Man on?" That's how he thought you were the Crazy Man.
And what, he still thinks I'm crazy, or he came to understand he was crazy?
He's 18, and he understands the world a little bit better.
Well, right, he was a child. They don't understand anything. That's what they call children. We have a society upside down. I can't unbelieve this. I go out sometimes. Frank, tell me if you see it the same. I see people with young children, and they lean over, and they say, "Would you like to go up the hill? Would you like to go here?" Instead of telling him what to do, they're asking a child what he'd like to do. How does a child know what he wants to do? They're all impulse at that age.
I got a great kid. In fact, he sings on one of my CDs when he was 8 before his voice changed. I'll send that to you.
So, Frank, when exactly did you go into witness protection in San Diego and take up opera? that would be a good way to hide, I got to tell you. It's the hide in plain sight, as they say. If a guy goes into witness protection, he's from Arthur Avenue in the Bronx, and he's living in San Diego with his 98-year-old mother, and he's singing opera, I got to tell you, what business are you in, Frank? Wait a minute, I don't want to know.
Yeah. Well,
I just ate some good salami. I'm visiting a relative's house, and we have a studio in the old pottery shed on the property where I'm doing my show right now. And he's having a bit of a party right after the show, and he got some salami. I can't believe how good the salami is. I never eat it, but it's holiday time. I had eggs for breakfast. I just had salami. I'm cholesterol city right now, Frank. What's your diet like?
Well, I have a really good diet, and I follow some really good diet plans. But let me tell you something. I'm going to cook this Italian stuffing with my mother for this turkey, which is nothing but cholesterol, but it's the
right.
Best you could.
Well, once in a, you know, look, when I was getting my degree in nutrition, which is 100 years ago, my thesis chairman said to me, "Don't worry about the individual meal." In other words, you can't be so nervous that you have one meal with a sausage in it, you're going to die. It's not the individual meal. It's how you generally eat over a long period of time. So it's good to indulge occasionally. Then you remember what it's like to be a human being.
Yeah, and I love that story you tell about the people that after they eat and their stomachs are hanging out, they're all on the couch.
To this day, all the men have passed on. They're already in God's world. But I remember to this day, sitting in that house, my mother's house, she'd make turkey for the whole family. I can't go into the details, but the mark of a good meal in a Mediterranean household was that after the meal, the men sat holding their stomach groaning with the top button open, rubbing their stomach going, "Oh, my God." That was the mark of a woman felt she had satisfied the people with food. You go into a house in America today, there's not even an appetizer on a table. Have you seen that one? I've gone to people's houses for dinner. You could starve to death till they serve you.
Not at my house. I mean, I cook.
No.
I got a big kitchen. That's all we do is cook here.
Now, in San Diego, are there decent Italian restaurants today?
Oh, there's a lot of good ones. But I live in Newport Beach. I live in Newport Beach, Michael.
Oh, right. You said that. Well, because enough guys went into witness protection in that area over the last 30, 40 years. Finally, the restaurants are decent.
Yeah, that's why there's some good ones here now.
And, Frank, I'll tell you another place you go. You go, like, if you run down the strip from Boynton Beach, Delray, to Boca, there's strip malls that are closed, but the Italian restaurants are thriving and no one's in there. How do you explain that?
Well, it's a witness protection, for sure.
But the food is good. You know, the food is in there. You go in, there's nobody in there but the owner and his son. And they're glad to see you, but I tell you, I don't know how they can knock out a meal. There's nobody in there. Every other store is closed in the little strip mall. They're all folded up. One furniture store, a patio store got out of business, but he's still there cooking away. Anyway, you're a good sport, Frank. I'm going to send you Trickle Up Poverty. How am I going to get a copy of your CD?
Well, if you just give me an address to send it to, I'd love to.
All right, the guys will do that. The guys will do that. Let me have one more aria before we go. Come on, a great one, Frank. You got a terrific voice.
Hey, bella cosa, una giornata al sole.
All right, thank you, Frank. We'll be back.
Savage.
You're so fine.
It is Michael Savage. I have an announcement to make. I don't know how you haven't read this yet. This just came out in the New York Times today, Tuesday, November 23rd, 2010, about Michael Savage to write two thrillers. That's right. You heard it first on the Savage Nation. It's in the New York Times Arts Beat, the culture at large. Michael Savage to write two thrillers. Michael Savage, the combative talk radio host, has signed a deal to write two thrillers for St. Martin's Press. The publisher said, "Until now, Mr. Savage has stuck to nonfiction with books like Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, The Savage Nation, and The Enemy Within." Mr. Savage, whose personal manifesto on his website calls for closing the United States' borders, ending affirmative action, and instituting a flat tax, attracts more than 9 million weekly listeners to his radio show. Now, of course, they left out my latest bestseller, typical New York Times slime backstabbing vermin. They left out A Trickle Up Poverty. Thank you, Julie. You're a real prize to journalism. Let me continue. His first novel, Abuse of Power, is set in San Francisco and tells the story of a failed carjacking that reveals a government cover-up, a sinister plot involving British officials, and a terrorist group known as the Hand of Allah that will make 9/11 look like child's play, the publisher said in the statement. It is scheduled for publication next summer. Oh, now they're quoting me against... You know, I have a word for this woman. Now she's smearing me with statements I didn't make. But I'll go on. Matthew Shear, the publisher of St. Martin's and imprint of Macmillan, said, "Mr. Savage had the ability to fashion a good action-packed thriller that is sure to please his legions for continuing the calumny." Julie, if you're listening to the show, unless you withdraw a paragraph, and I'm going to make it stick, Julie, if you think you're going to get me killed by publishing this garbage about something I didn't say and repeat the lies, that Hillary Clinton is coming for you. Anyway, the big story is Michael Savage to write two thrillers. The other big news is Michael Savage to sue the New York 800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Read Trickle Up Poverty. Listen to the show every day. And remember this, Obama has the witness protection program in the White House.
Savage. Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Tensions run high on the South Korean peninsula after the North shot dozens of rounds of artillery onto a populated South Korean island, forcing the South to return fire and scramble fighter jets.
South Korea has confirmed firing dozens of artillery shells in retaliation against an attack by North Korea.
We understand that about 60 houses are on fire. These are disputed waters. There are naval skirmishes.
What is the fear here that this could perhaps escalate beyond what we're seeing now and hearing?
Little darling, oh, oh, little darling, oh, oh, well, how are you?
Now on the Savage Nation, we turn to the most important website in the world, which is michaelsavage.com, and here are some of the stories. North Korea has launched an artillery attack on an island owned by South Korea, killing a few. And the lunatics in the North are now vowing merciless military strikes against the South. Okay, we'll let that go without comment. Lowest ever Obama job approval rating sinks to 39%. Wow, unbelievable. And for this Thanksgiving, stuff yourself with the truth. Check out Trickle Up Poverty. Taliban commander in secret talks with the West was a fake. Second leading Republican won't back the New START treaty. Thank God. Fearless genius Michael Savage on what's trickling up from Obama. It's a new review by Jim Fletcher that you really should read. You won't see it anywhere but on michaelsavage.com. Here's a sad story. A Marine general's son was killed and laid to rest in Arlington. The only son of a general to have been killed in Iraq or Afghanistan in the last 9 years. Very sad story. Terrible pictures coming out of Cambodia. 340 or more killed in a stampede. Ugly pictures. And speaking of an ugly picture, take a look at Robert Gates, our defense secretary, showing no reaction while the U.S. is criticized right in front of his face. The communist head of Bolivia, Evo Morales, puts down America, and our defense secretary shows no emotion. Now for some audio on the Savage Nation. And the first clip I'd like to play for you is the so-called, fighter for the poor, Al Sharpton. He's advocating that the FCC crack down on talk show hosts such as myself. Now, of course, Sharpton himself is a talk show host that no one listens to. And that's why he wants the government to interfere and make him famous.
Part of what I think FCC needs to do is give the guidelines of what is excusable and what is not, what is permittable or permitted, I should say, and what is not. Because clearly you're not trying to block free speech. But I think that for people to engage in programming shows that will use racial or gender bias as their format, we've got a right to say there are standards that FCC can say that you cannot continue to have licenses to do that.
Look who's talking, Al Sharpton talking about standards so that people aren't offended.
You got to remember, those stations are regulated by FCC, granted by FCC. They go back to them to get waivers. They go back to them to get consolidation. They have the right to set standards. That does not impair your right to speak what you believe, but it does say you are not going to be able to do that to offend groups of Americans based on their race, their gender, their sexual status, none of that.
Luckily, Al Sharpton isn't in power in the government, but Congressman Barney Frank is, and he's calling for Americans not to intervene in poor non-white societies. Does that mean in Haiti as well?
It may be possible for a wealthy Western society heavily to intervene in a non-Western, non-white, poor society and help them out, but probably not us.
Barney couldn't stop there. He had to emphasize that Americans are the least useful people to intervene in foreign affairs. Really? They don't want our aid?
Given much of what I think is unfair, the anger about America, the jealousies, whatever, we're often the least useful people to go in there. And all we do is make people angrier at us.
And the man at the top, Barack Obama, admitted to not having to experience what we Americans must go through at the airport. No kidding.
Let me first of all make a confession.
You know, I don't go through security checks to get on planes these days. So I haven't personally experienced some of the procedures that have been put in place by TSA.
But the president said it was the actions of the Christmas Day bomber that caused this intrusive airport screening. Well, I have a question or two. It was your Homeland Security Department that let him on a plane without a passport with a one-way ticket, wasn't it?
I will also say that in the aftermath of the Christmas Day bombing, our TSA personnel are properly under enormous pressure to make sure that you don't have somebody slipping on a plane with some sort of explosive device on their persons. And since the explosive device that was on Mr. Abdulmutallab was not detected by ordinary metal detectors, it has meant that TSA has had to try to adapt to make sure that passengers on planes are safe.
Well, that's the reasoning behind it, and that's why a TSA agent will be behind you, and I really mean behind you. This is the Savage Nation. Have you noticed my show has gotten better over the last few months? Do you know why? Because I'm flapping less and I'm coasting more. I've watched old guys sometimes, how efficiently they move or how efficiently they... Well, you know, it's very hard to describe. You ever watch an old boxer? I don't mean old boxer. There are no old boxers. In sports, I don't know if that analogy holds up because the guys break down very young. But there are professions where an individual will do things more with less energy, let's put it to you that way, and do it perfectly. Flap less, coast more. A painter, for example. I've told a story before. I don't want to beat this up. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The topic of the TSA and pat-downs and body scans is really not going away. As the holiday season ramps up, frustrations are only going to get bigger. Joining us now is David Ritkers, a civil liberties and counterterrorism legal policy analyst with the Cato Institute. David Ritkers, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, what's your analysis here?
I see a lot of activity to support really just the spending of money on the body scanners. And we have had about $300 million of stimulus funds spent to buy scanners. And all told, with that and some increases in annual appropriations, we have spent or are going to spend about $1 billion on the scanner technology. However, it's a technology with a lot of limitations. It does not... prove as effective as has been advertised for what we're talking about, which is liquid gel and powder explosives and the thin plastics that would contain them. So there's a lot of security theater going on that's inconveniencing travelers without a whole lot of security benefit.
Isn't this just a big money grab?
A lot of this is driven by the money, and the real story is that to support the expense that we've committed to on the scanners, we have to spend a lot more money to apply the technology on the broad basis that we've committed to. So the fact that we've spent $300 million in stimulus funds and overall about $1 billion will be spent does not reveal the fact that actually the annual expenses in the additional screening necessary to support it is actually a bigger commitment than the stimulus fund itself. A March GAO report found that to apply this technology as broadly as promised, we're going to have to hire 5,000 more TSA screeners, increase the workforce by about 10%, that's going to cost us about $340 million a year extra. And when you add in the fact that, contrary to the manufacturer's advertisements, it's actually slower to go through the scanner line, not only is it a lot of extra expense, but it's a lot of extra time at the airport and inconvenience at the airport with very little security gain to show for it.
Why do you suppose they're pushing this so hard?
Well, that's because the politics behind the decision to put the screeners in have the body scanners in have, you know, created a bureaucratic incentive toward what we're doing as opposed to what's really effective. And the army of former senior DHS officials working as lobbyists for the two major manufacturers of the body scanner technology have put us on the path to where we are. But if you look at the GAO report that came out in the wake of the Christmas Day attempted bombing last year, the GAO questioned the technology and said it's actually not clear that had the body scanner technology been used, that it would have even have found the bomb that Farouk Abdulmutallab hid under his clothing. And the GAO report was actually prescient in one other respect. The GAO report said that you know, we've put a lot of emphasis on screening and hijacking, you know, counter-hijacking measures.
Mm-hmm.
But the one area that we probably ought to look at more beyond this is cargo packages being bundled and put onto a pallet and then put onto a passenger plane. Well, where are we now? And we're looking at with this new surprising technique, which wouldn't be surprised if you'd read the GAO report, they were worried about printer toner cartridges that are, you know, mixed into packages that get bundled and put onto passenger aircraft. So, you know, we have to look at aviation security, you know, not just in the visible things, you know, how much hassle can we create for the individual innocent traveler. It's really, you know, we have to talk about the, you know, the layers of security and having sort of a spectrum of the aviation security, you know, factors taken into account. And I think that we're spending a lot of money on this one piece of equipment that doesn't work as well as advertised against low-density materials, the powders, gels, and liquids that we're supposed to be protecting against. And we're paying a lot of money. And at the same time, you know, we're sanctioning a you know, a government intrusion into the, you know, the integrity of your person that I think is unprecedented.
Well, how much loss of personal liberty is too much, in your opinion?
Right, and as you know, as we've seen, the Israelis have not chosen to use this technology, and I think that the Israelis have as much of an aviation threat as anybody. Given their geography and position in the world, and they haven't used this because Al-Qaeda on the Arabian Peninsula, which is the organization that supported Farouk Abdulmutallab's attempted bombing on Christmas Day of last year, they've already found a workaround to defeat this technology, and that is hiding explosives inside of a body cavity.
Oh, my God.
And a would-be Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula assassin tried to kill the senior Saudi domestic counterterrorism official.
Really?
And in that instance, the explosives hidden inside of his body didn't do any fatal damage to anyone except the carrier of the explosives. But if someone is willing to hide explosives in a body cavity, that's going to sail right through these body scanner machines. And if they're willing to hide it inside a body cavity and then, you know, go to the restroom while in flight, remove the explosives and you know, put them against the hull of the aircraft, well, there might be an aircraft taken down that way.
Oh, my God.
And that's why the Israelis have chosen not to take this technological mass screening approach to their security and focus more on, you know, assessing which people are a threat and not applying, you know, a very intrusive blanket security regime that focuses on a lot of people who admittedly pose no threat to passenger aviation.
Wait. Hold on a minute. What can we, the people, do?
Well, we have to ask our elected officials to make smart choices about applying what are clearly limited resources to confront the problem. And the knee-jerk bureaucratic reaction that's produced a blanket body scanner policy is exactly the kind of thinking that we should tell our elected officials not to endorse. And we have to get that. We have to get our leaders in Washington to understand, that some security measures certainly work as a blanket policy, using a metal detector, and then for people who are identified by whatever kind of threat assessment you're going to make of individuals traveling, may be subjected to a pat down.
Right, right, right.
And if you're serious about this liquid or powder or gel explosive threat, then if they meet a certain level of criteria, you have to treat it more like a drug mule, and an X-ray is going to be the appropriate technology because it's actually going to find the explosives that we're worried about. But the approach that we're taking right now with a blanket body scanner policy is not dealing with the threat, and is just creating a lot of unnecessary inconvenience for travelers who pose no threat to commercial aviation.
David Rittkus, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me again. I'm always happy to talk with you, Michael.
Look, this is not an easy topic. We all want to be safer, but at what cost? Where do we draw the line between keeping us safe and intruding on our personal liberties? The issue has been discussed many times before, going back at least to Roman times, through Ben Franklin and into trickle-up poverty. Read all about it. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
On MichaelSavage.com, Pelosi to fly commercial. That's right. Girls fly. But she's not going to be able to fly in Air Force jets. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is going to give up more than the majority of the next Congress. She'll be stripped of her right to use military aircraft. Maybe they can be used for fighting wars instead of flying. Well, let's leave that go. Appeals court says the GPS tracking for drugs violates the Fourth Amendment. Isn't it wonderful, the country we live in? An illegal alien sought in the home invasion rape of a little girl has fled to Mexico. Shocking. Shocking. You mean he didn't flee to Canada? TSA chief says resisting scanners just means delays. Means give in now to the deviants in blue gloves. MichaelSavage.com has other amazing stories. I'm not going to touch on all of them. Let's see. MTV glamorizes an unwed teen mother. No kidding. What'd you expect from MTV? Man in the past jogger attacks has been found guilty of killing Chandra Levy. And finally, on Michael Savage, a radioactive mouse is on the loose at a nuclear test site. And finally, Ben Franklin said, they who can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. That's old Ben Franklin, the man with a kite and a key. All this and more on MichaelSavage.com. Play some rock and roll for me. Soon the show will be over.
I'm the great.
We've played this too much already. It's overused. Kill it. Break the record. Obama clip. Okay, play the Hispanic Caucus Obama clip. Let's hear it.
Long before America was even an idea, this land of plenty was home to many peoples. The British and French, to Dutch and Spanish, to Mexican, to countless Indian tribes.
All right, so you see he speaks loudly, boldly, and clearly when he's in front of an ethnic pressure group or a lobby group, such as the whatever it was he was speaking to. But when he's asked to make a comment on Ahmadinejad coming here saying it was an inside job, 9/11, he gives sort of a dispassionate, disconnected, a little, a side type of thing. And that is why he's unpopular. That's exactly why. So I think I made my point from my point of view, Do we have better rock and roll for me right now? That I like. I like that. 56 Chevy. AM radio only, no Blaupunk. Those are the days of... That's so sweet. What a sweet song. You know, I know. Well, let me just listen. Like pizza in El Rey. Pizza Paul is everywhere. You know, the more I think about witness protection operations, I would say the U.S. government has more pizza parlors in South Florida than... Is that the number one business that the U.S. government is actually in? How much of the stimulus money went for witness protection pizza parlors across America? Turn it off. You know, no, I say it in good faith, in good jest, because you drive around South Florida in the summer when it's like a funeral parlor, it's dead, and there's like one blackened out mall after another with black glass. Everyone's out of business, and there's Italian restaurants. They're thriving. They're always open. Lights are always on. They're on till midnight. Everywhere you go, from Delray Beach down to Fort Lauderdale, it's one pizzeria or Italian restaurant after another. You can find every cuisine of Italy in that region. And no one's in there, but it's fully operational. Does witness protection actually pay for the business and keep it going if there is no business? I wondered about that. It was triggered with the Calzone fight the other day on the guy who jumped over the counter when he thought the guy's insulted his Calzone. And he was arrested for having a gun. He was like hiding as an assassin. Like, sorry, mister, but you see, you're in witness protection. You're not allowed to have a gun for that. And B, you can't pistol whip a customer because he didn't like your calzone. So you're going back to jail. No, but let's say the government sets you up in witness protection, let's say with a yogurt business in Marin County. Let's say they give you a yogurt shop. You're in for like multiple murders, but you're out after a certain number of years. You turned on your. Do they run the business for you? I mean, they give you a profit, a payment, meaning if you're not making a profit. I'm wondering, how many businesses is witness protection in? I'd like to know what the bill is for that, for these pizzerias, and how good is the pizza in them to begin with? That's all I care about. Is the pizza any good? Is what I really like to know. I don't eat calzones. There's too much cheese in them. They're proportionate. Can I talk about food for 30 seconds or less? So I go to North Beach to a different restaurant. Now I'm going now off the beaten track. Now I go to a little place that I used to go years ago. I don't want to talk to anybody. This guy's nice. He's a big Sicilian guy. He leaves you alone. Very respectful. Not witness protection, by the way. The food is amazing. He has varieties of pasta I've never seen in my life. So I go in there. He knows right away. Gives me the Heineken. I don't even ask. No, not fine wine. I don't want the dining experience. Just give me a bottle of beer. They're really, honest to God, I'm not playing ordinary Jody. I drank wine for years, and I can drink the $1,000 bottle as good as you can. But you know what? At the end of the day, I'd rather have a beer than anything else. So he says to me, Mike, you want the Heineken? Yes, so the Heineken and the pot and the salad. It is such a pleasant experience to go to San Francisco and sit in these restaurants and look out the window and see people streaming by. You know what I mean? Like the old, the young, the tourists, the locals, the dogs, the children, while I'm eating. So I said to a friend of mine, Jack, who I was with the other night, I said, Jack, you travel a lot to Europe. He said, it's identical to what it is in so many cities in Europe. And that's the thing that has always attracted me and brings me back to San Francisco. San Francisco is not Mayor Annie Tussum Newsom. San Francisco is not Nancy Pelosi. San Francisco is not simply these whack jobs that you hear all the time. There's an entire other San Francisco that I actually live in when I'm there. And I have a place over there, you know what I'm saying? There's a great week. It's like a night like tonight where the bay is there's a certain color right now. It's flat and calm. It's a light blue, like a light blue when it gets like this, when there's a full moon and it's hot. Like, I'll go out on the boat this weekend. I'll go out under the Golden Gate. I'll go out about, I don't know, maybe before we get to the ocean itself. It might be as flat as a lake, and I'll shut the engines off in my 40-ton boat, and we'll just drift for a while. No sound except the sound of the water and the birds. That's a beautiful thing to do. Oh, did I tell you what happened? You won't believe this one. I hadn't been on my boat in a month because I was away. I came back, and I'm this done, that done, the whack. I finally said, go out before the show. So I go out in the morning, I go out to another area the other way. I go to the North Bay, where it's normally calm, and I see a series of, it's like a tidal current underneath the water. Everyone knows about tides, even if you're not a boater, you know that there's four of them a day, two highs and two lows. By the way, that's what the human being is. I don't know how many different times I have to tell you. You're not sick, you're not neurotic, you don't need medication. If you have mood swings, it's because you're alive. If you don't have mood swings, then you're an idiot. The tides have two highs and two lows a day. Why should you be any different?
people have gotten such distorted view of themselves. They think they're supposed to be happy all the time. So the drug companies sell them on pills or therapy. You're not supposed to be happy 24 hours a day. Two times a day you're supposed to be up, and two times a day you're supposed to be down, like the tide itself. You know, you get up, maybe you don't feel good. Good. You'll feel better later after a cup of coffee and you get out to work. Notice your mood's up, just like the tide. And then it goes down in the afternoon. You're burned out, you're tired, you're exhausted, you're bored. So your mood goes down like the tide. Then at night, you go out for a drink, you feel good again. You come home, you feel good again. You see your wife and you feel bad again. I'm joking. That's an old, maybe she feels bad when you come home. But anyway, the point is, just a quick run. I want a 1 hour ride. So I go to a very calm area and I see like under the surface of the water, like a choppy. So I look at it. I said, what is this? It looked like kelp, but it wasn't. It was a tidal current. I've seen tidal currents before, and I figure it wouldn't affect me. It's a 40-ton vessel. So I drive right through it. I swear as God is my witness, for the first time in my boating life, which is 30 years now, the boat almost got spun around. I went into a whirlpool. And instinctually, like a good pilot or a boater, I immediately put my hand on the correct throttle and corrected against it and kept the boat from being spun in a circle. It was amazing. I can't imagine what would have happened to a guy in like a little, you know, 15, 20-foot fishing, like a rowboat. He would have been like turned around and around like in a toilet bowl. I couldn't believe it. And so you have to understand that an ocean or a bay has many things going on at once. It's not just the tides. It's not just the wind. There's also currents underneath the water. Now, why am I telling you this? To boast about the fact I have a boat? I'm telling this to you for a reason. Because you can draw a bigger conclusion from it. Life is very much like boating. You know, you think you're on a calm, flat surface, but beneath the surface, there are tides that are moving inside you. And sometimes you have to be prepared. An unexpected tidal current can sweep over your emotions when you least expect it. And you get older, you learn how to deal with it, whatever it may be. I mean, you know, don't need to make a joke about it. But there's a lot to be learned from that in a humble manner, a very simple, humble manner. I hope I didn't bore you with that distraction. I call it China Blue. Now I remember. The San Francisco Bay tonight, when it's flat and calm like this, I call it China Blue, if there really is such a color. It's a really light, light blue. So if you're driving over an area like from Sausalito coming over the Golden Gate Bridge, and sometimes it can hit you, your breath gets swept away. It's a flat, calm China Blue. And then you look at the San Francisco city lit up with the lights just at dusk, and you see like a whole kaleidoscope of possibilities open up before your eyes. And I call those Fellini nights. It's like a night of Cabiria in San Francisco. And I can guarantee you I won't be there. So don't go looking for me. A friend of mine said he has a restaurant. He said the other day 12 guys came in from Australia. They said they hoped to meet Michael Savage. Of course, I hadn't been there for a long time. Not for that particular reason. I said, how'd they find me from Australia? He said, they listened to you on the internet. Isn't that amazing? The reach of radio. Same with the television, really. I'll be right back.
Savage.
1, 2, 3. Hey. Look at Mr. Lee. 3, 4, 5. Hey. Look at him jive. Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee. Oh, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee.
What
oh,
happened
Mr.
last Lee, night? My dog Teddy bit me. I know it's a shock and a heartbreak to most of you. My little poodle, man's best friend. I mean, it's almost like a man bites dog story, isn't it? It's sad. It's heartbreaking. I didn't put him down. I didn't do anything like that. But it was so shocking. It was an anomaly. It came out of nowhere. And all I could think about today was I got the little, you know, like the mouth print on my hand. I kept saying, what the hell is this metaphor? The metaphor is let sleeping dogs lie, in the sense that we were lying in bed watching television. And he was at the foot of the bed where he normally is. And normally while he's sleeping, I play with his feet or whatever. I touch him, just, you know, talk to him. I don't know, whatever you do with your dog, he comforts me. All of a sudden, he snarled. He turned like a monster. And I said, stop, and he bit my hand. Well, I had a choice right then and there. I could have hit him, which I didn't. I was going to roll him up in a blanket and carry him out and throw him out in the garden in the blanket. I didn't do that. I mean, I wasn't afraid of him, but I felt terrible because it was like my best friend bites me? What the hell was going on? Instead, what I did was, is I left the bedroom and I said, come out. And I shut the lights and he followed and I locked him out and that was the end of that. And then he was, of course, shocked that he had done it. Dogs are really crazy, but I know dog behavior. The point of the story is, as I was riding on my bicycle this morning, I was thinking to my maker the following. I said, what message have you sent me from the other world? What message are you sending me from the other side? Because I see animals as spirits, and I see these little furry angels as somehow guides, soul guides. I mean, in that sense, I'm a primitive. I understand that. But that's the way I'm made, okay? It's the way I've evolved. It's the way I think. I said, there's got to be a bigger meaning. I'm the kind of guy who believes everything happens for a reason, okay? What was the reason? What? All I could think of is, well, go back to the simple adage, let sleeping dogs lie. So what sleeping dog should I not provoke today, I said to myself. What do you want to talk about in the Savage Nation? Tori in Texas, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I just want to say, although I'm an open gay woman, I've been a supporter of the Tea Party, and I have been very influenced by you ever since September 2001.
And I don't know why you would say the one part of your sentence that doesn't make sense is when you said, although. Why would you say, although I'm an open gay woman? Why would that matter to me?
Well, it doesn't really matter to you, but it matters to a lot of my gay, I wouldn't say friends.
Oh, okay, because they're all liberals, but there's not one mention of the word gay or homosexual in 110,000 words in Trickle Up Poverty, is there?
No, there's not. And forgive me for not completing the book yet. However, I have been ridiculed.
Tori, gay people should by nature be conservative. They have more to lose than any other group in America if they continue to play footsies with radical Islam. What else do you want to know? I need a little music break here in the middle of talking. Not that anything's wrong. The trick to now I can sidetrack the recipes again now. The best recipe I ever saw for cooking garlic, I saw in a movie, I think Goodfellas, where they go in the can and the guy slices the garlic with a razor blade into Kleenex thin strips so that when you slip them into the olive oil, the garlic actually dissolves. Because, you know, it's very, I mean, eating clumps of garlic, you have to either be a horse or me. I'm one of the few people on earth who eat raw onions like an animal. I do. There are sometimes I'll take a piece of Italian bread and I'll put some olive oil in it. I'll put raw onion on it or raw garlic. It's hard to believe. You can still, people can't believe it, but we are still the Neolithic man, whether you know it or not. We are not the evolved effete man who needs raspberries dribbled on lamb chops. Trust me on that one. Well, let's see what else is in the news. We have so much to talk about on the show today. Let's ask you this question. Will you boycott the body scanners? Well, let's be realistic here. When you're standing in a long line at an airport trying to either get home or to a relative's house to relax and eat turkey and visit with family, do you really think you're going to refuse to go through the scanner? I don't. Do you really care that an anonymous security worker sees your nude outline? Now, what is your main objection, if you have any at all, to the TSA's new security efforts? Is that they're intrusive or ineffective or both? Here's some more questions for the Savage Nation. What are the polls saying? According to a new USA, not TSA poll, a new USA poll, a majority of Republicans, 69%, said the extension of the Bush-era tax cuts by Congress was very important, while the majority of loser Democrats said passing an extension of unemployment benefits was critical. You know, the country used to be divided between the haves and the have-nots. I'd say it's between the workers and the leeches now, wouldn't you? Let's do a Savage Nation poll. What would you like this lame duck Congress to complete? The USA Today Gallup poll thought it was important to ask about gays in the military and allowing illegal immigrants to become citizens. But what would you, the listeners to the Savage Nation, like this Congress to do before the holidays? And we'll talk about those and other questions on the Savage Nation. I mean, the real big question before we go into this hour is the North Korean situation. It's a very big deal. We don't know where it's going to end, but let's hope it ends before it gets worse. Japan is preparing for any eventuality. China is watching. The White House condemns. Russia says there's colossal danger. It's going on, and it's not getting better, but the South denies seeking redeployment of U.S. tactical nuclear weapons. I hope they're lying, by the way. I hope that the South does have U.S. tactical nuclear weapons to protect themselves from the maniac in North Korea. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Poll says the Obama job approval has sunk to 39%. Even Fidel Castro has called Obama a snake charmer. I wonder if Castro read Trickle Up Poverty. Do you think a communist would read that book, guys? I hope so. That's it for the Savage Nation.
Savage.